What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. What up, Chris?
What's going on, man? How are you?
Chris, man, oh man, has it been a wild week. It's been a roller coaster of events and emotions throughout the Cavs organization and the games that have been played. I can't believe we can say that the Cavs beat the top teams in the West and in the East and then come back and say that they lost to the Hawks and the Nets in the same sentence. It's been a turbulent week when it comes to injuries in the last 2 weeks. And in tonight's game on Sunday against the Nets, the Cavs were not only out their three starters and 60% of their starting lineup, but they also were without Dean Wade. And now we circle back all the way to when we talked in the beginning of the season of how George Niang and Dean Wade were fighting over minutes. And not to say that George Niang hasn't stepped up in the power forward role in everybody's absence, but it was extremely notable how Dean Wade is missed in this Cavs lineup when he's out. And not only on the defensive end, but on the rebounding end and almost every facet, spacing on offense. And that's something that we weren't talking about in the beginning of the season, but now we have to mention Chris. It's been wild, dude, to just see everything going on. What's your takeaways from the last couple of weeks and everything going on with the Cavs?
It has been wild, and that's the grind of an 82-game season. And that's part of the reason why you don't make any sweeping declarations after a significant win against Boston or Minnesota. You talk about it, you discuss it, you write about what happens, but you don't project it as if it's some kind of thing that's going to change the season or something along those lines. Just like a loss against the Brooklyn Nets on a random Sunday night in March is not going to make their season go off the rails either. You have to take the entire body of work, beginning of the season to end of season, collect all the data that you need to collect, and then formulate an opinion on what this team can do when it matters most. And the thing is, Ethan, these games matter from a seeding standpoint. We have talked about it. These games matter when it comes to figuring out what works, what doesn't work, what combinations work, what combinations don't, what five-man lineups work, and what five-man lineups maybe J.B. Bickerstaff needs to stay away from. But there was an entire agreement, it seemed like, from everybody in and around the NBA, and including the fan base of the Cavs, that the judgment of this team was going to come in April and May in the playoffs. How much did they learn from that series? How much better did they get from that series? So that's why it's always bizarre to me that we're supposed to make some kind of declaration about this team or some kind of judgment on this team when they're missing 60% of their starting lineup and they were missing four regular rotation players, including a guy who was playing like an MVP candidate before his knee problem popped up. So I don't know what I'm supposed to say about tonight's game. I don't know what I'm supposed to say about tomorrow's game against Phoenix. It almost doesn't matter.
It's like we've been saying that for a while, that these teams, and especially the Cavs right now, love to bank up wins against inferior teams, but being able to be ready and healthy for the playoffs is the most important thing. And the game against the Suns tomorrow, obviously, you got to wait and see who the Suns are going to have healthy on their end with Devin Booker having his own issues. But we know what Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal can do and things of that nature. But the Cavs are worried about themselves more than anything else. They're continuing to try and get their guys healthy. Max Strus has been at the home games just in regular clothes, walking around, looks fine. Evan Mobley's been walking around in a boot, in a walking boot the last couple of games. And Donovan Mitchell was at shoot around today and was actually getting extra work in afterwards today. And after being reevaluated this past weekend, J.B. Bickerstaff mentioned pregame that he is okay to do some on-court activity, and they'll just have to wait and see how his knee reacts after, because it's always the next day when players might feel something that could make their process a little bit longer. But Chris, I know you talked to Donovan a little bit after tonight's game. Did he say anything to you that would indicate that this could be a long-term thing?
No, I don't expect it to be a long-term thing. I also sense a lot of optimism from the organization, from the coaching staff, and from Donovan that he could return on the Cavs' upcoming road trip. It's a 3-game road trip, make stops in Houston, New Orleans, and Indiana. And between the New Orleans and Houston game, there's actually 2 days off for the Cavs, which is going to be the first time in a long time that that's going to be the case. They've got 2 scheduled practices before playing against the Rockets. And I think if Donovan is able to participate in those practices, take contact, maybe there's a feeling from JB Bickerstaff and the training staff that that's the final hurdle that Donovan needs to clear in order to return to the floor. I do not expect him to play Monday against the Phoenix Suns, but I do sense that there is optimism for his return on the road trip. And the biggest thing to this point, Ethan, is that one, his knee is responding well to this treatment, to the PRP injection that he had this past week. And number two, he hasn't had any kind of setback in terms of his recovery where after an extensive workout, he needs to slow it down a little bit or he needs to rein himself in a little bit. Each time that he has tried to go through a workout, he's been able to the next day feel good enough to then go through another workout. So he worked out Thursday, he worked out Friday, he worked out earlier this morning following Cavs shoot-around. So all signs are positive when it comes to Donovan. And the other thing that him and I briefly talked about is that he is not going to force his way back out onto the court, and the Cavs are not going to force him back out onto the court for the sake of being eligible for end-of-season awards. He is dangerously close to the 17 games missed, the most that any player can miss now with the 65-game rule in effect. It's obviously going to impact Joel Embiid's ability to win the MVP again, and Donovan is very, very close to hitting that threshold where he would not be eligible to be on MVP ballots. He would not be eligible when it comes to all NBA teams either. But there are bigger things in play when it comes to the Cavs, and for Donovan, for the Cavs, it's about April, May, and June. It's not about end-of-season awards, and it's certainly not about March 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, whatever we're talking about when they have a game coming up in the near future.
All right, Chris. I know we don't have a whole lot to talk about today, but I wanted to take a quick break before we get into our next little area of topics, and I think it's a good time for it. So, before then, I got to put our subscribers on to something new. For our listeners, if you like food and drinks, and who doesn't, Cleveland.com is breaking new ground with our lively new podcast about dining and drinking in the greater Cleveland area. The hosts talk about the latest foodie happenings, joined by the most in-the-know experts in town. It's called Dine Drink CLE, and you can find it anywhere you download podcasts. Give it a listen, quench your thirst, and feed that appetite. When we come back to the Wine and Gold Talk podcast, we're going to discuss how the G Leaguers fared in the last couple of minutes against the Nets. But before then, become a Cavs insider and interact with me and Chris by subscribing to Subtext. On Subtext, you'll be able to get first information about injury updates and anything that might be going on in the Cavs organization. And to get those updates, sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from Chris and me. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Chris, man, I was not shocked, but I was not expecting a nearly all G League lineup to finish the game against the Nets on Sunday. And they played the last 3 minutes together. It was Pete Nance, Isaiah Mobley, Craig Porter Jr., who is now on a full contract, and also Imani Bates. I know we were talking about not making declarative statements, but I think the opportunity showed the difference between the opportunity and the ability to make plays against different rosters. We looked at the Brooklyn Nets, who still had most of their starting lineup on the court against these G League two-way players, and it didn't go as we would have hoped, but maybe as we might have expected. What was your thoughts on how things panned out to end the game, Chris?
If the Cavs play any meaningful game, any meaningful minutes for Imani Bates, Pete Nance, or Isaiah Mobley, it's going to be problematic for them, and the season's not going the way that anybody wants it to go. That's the bottom line. I mean, we're talking about guys who are toward the end of the bench. We're talking about guys who are not in the nightly rotation of a team that has playoff aspirations, of a team that is battling with Milwaukee Bucks for the second seed in the Eastern Conference. This isn't a training ground, okay? This is not. This is the NBA. The training ground is the G League, and Isaiah Mobley and Imani Bates and Pete Nance are where they should be, spending most of their time with the G League affiliate Cleveland Charge. Imani Bates isn't ready for meaningful minutes in an NBA game situation, not in a game of consequence. And the same thing for Isaiah Mobley and Pete Nance. They're just not ready for that. They have to develop further. They have to play through their mistakes. They have to continue to sharpen their skills at both ends of the court. So tonight was a situation where the Cavs were playing the first game of a back-to-back. J.B. Bickerstaff recognized that the team simply did not have it. There were plenty of signs that they were out of gas after a grueling stretch of this schedule. And he wanted to save the legs of George Niang, Isaac Okoro, Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, Darius Garland, Sam Merrill, even as much as he possibly can, because the Cavs are playing the Phoenix Suns on Monday and then they're heading on the road. So once you recognize that your team just doesn't have it and you're not going to win the game, you just do what you can to start thinking about the big picture and not make one loss turn into two based on your own decision making. You know what I mean? So on nights like this, where the Cavs are missing Dean Wade and Donovan Mitchell and Max Strus and Evan Mobley and Ty Jerome, who obviously, if he was healthy and he had actually played throughout the course of this season, it would be a night for him too to be in the rotation. But when you're missing that many bodies, that's really the only justification for playing those guys that we're talking about here, that are end-of-bench players that are not ready for substantial minutes in the NBA. Not right now, anyway.
And Chris, I think what this second injury stint of multiple players being out, this is obviously coming at a much worse time for the Cavs, and also with more players simply being out, you get to see the importance of each individual player that the Cavs are missing. And one that we haven't mentioned yet today that is on the verge of returning is Tristan Thompson. And we were talking about when the trade deadline was approaching and all of those things, we were mentioning the thought of the necessity for an extra power forward, an extra four, an extra 3-and-D type player that could play multiple positions, guard multiple positions. And without Dean Wade, without Tristan Thompson, it's become very apparent how good those guys are at their jobs and understanding their roles. And obviously, we mentioned Donovan Mitchell potentially coming back for the game against the Rockets during their road series after their two-day break after the game against the Pelicans. And that's the same day that Tristan Thompson would be eligible to return. And obviously, a lot of the guys in the Cavs locker room has mentioned that they are happily going to re-welcome him to the locker room during the games. He's allowed around the team before the games at practice and stuff, but he's not allowed in the facility 2 hours before tip-off. So just the energy of Tristan is going to be coming back. But Chris, I wanted to know from your perspective, do you think there's going to be like a ramp-up period for him?
No, I don't think so, because he's been able to do everything that he needs to do on the court. It's a suspension, yes, but it's allowed him to work out. It's allowed him to ride the bike. It's allowed him to be in the facility and use the VersaClimber and run up and down the court. Obviously, it's not basketball game shape type stuff, but it wasn't a situation where he was dealing with a knee injury or an ankle injury and he couldn't stay in shape the way that for 4 weeks, Darius Garland couldn't do anything to raise his heart rate. Or Evan Mobley is walking in a boot and he can't do anything on the court at this point in time. So, I mean, I don't think there's going to be any kind of significant ramp-up situation for Tristan. Also because he's not a 30 to 35 minute a night player. He's somebody who is going to be a specialist in his role. He is somebody who, when the Cavs are playing against bigger opponents and they need somebody else to fill some backup center minutes, they're going to go to Tristan instead of Damian Jones. But it's going to be short bursts the way that it was before he was suspended for these 25 games. So I think he's doing the stuff behind the scenes that he needs to do. He's running up and down the court. He's going through conditioning workouts as best he can. And he's not somebody who is going to play long stretches in the game to begin with. So I just don't think there's going to be any kind of situation where he's got to build himself back into playing shape. Now, he might have a little bit of rust when he comes back. And he might be catching some wind as soon as he comes back. But I don't think the Cavs are going to say, all right, we're going to give him like an extra week and a half of practice before we put him out on the court. And to your point about like the depth in the front court, all of that was just exacerbated tonight in an interesting situation. I mean, George Niang's got to go into the starting lineup. It was his third straight start. The only reliable backup four that the Cavs had going into the night was Isaiah Mobley on a two-way contract. They had to give 19 minutes to Damian Jones. So when you don't have Dean Wade and you don't have Evan Mobley, some of the lineup versatility just goes out the window. One of the things that is so beneficial of Dean Wade is that he can play the 3-4, and we saw him play small ball 5 against the Boston Celtics. That option is no longer available to the Cavs when Dean isn't there. And I think, given the way that the Cavs were giving up offensive rebounds and given the way that the Brooklyn Nets like to switch and they've got some length and athleticism and size, I think the Cavs were reluctant while the game was still in the balance to go too small in their lineup. So they had to use Damian Jones. They had to use Isaiah Mobley. And I just think when you don't have Evan Mobley at the same time as Dean Wade and Tristan Thompson, your optionality for the kinds of lineups that you can put out there against an opponent like Brooklyn, I mean, it's minimal. Jared Allen was in foul trouble. Darius Garland in foul trouble. Sam Merrill was in foul trouble. J.B. Bickerstaff was scrambling to try and find the right five-man groupings. He just didn't have a lot of reliable options beyond his starting five. And you know this too, Ethan. Caris LeVert starting, it was only the second time all year for him because the Cavs have been consistent in their belief that he functions better when he's in a consistent, comfortable role. And they've been really, really adamant about not putting him in the starting lineup, keeping him in that six-man role where he can anchor the second unit when he has a lot of ball handling freedom and a lot of playmaking freedom. They didn't want to put Caris LeVert in the starting lineup, but they thought of all the options that they had available to them on a night like tonight, it was really their only option against this particular opponent. So that tells you just how dire the situation was going into the game for the Cavs. And it's not surprising that the result was what it was. Maybe it wasn't supposed to be as lopsided. Maybe people didn't think it was going to be as lopsided because Brooklyn stinks. But when you're missing that many reliable players, four of your top nine in your every night rotation, five of your top 10 before Tristan got suspended, okay, good luck.
Yeah, all hands on deck, and that's when all the hands are tired. Everybody was tired coming into the game and then said, yeah, okay.
I'm tired.
Well, Chris, that's warranted. That's warranted.
I mean, this schedule has been brutal. We asked Craig Porter Jr. about it in the locker room after because he's a rookie and he's going through it for the first time, and he just kind of scoffed and shook his head. Like, what are we supposed to do when we have 17 games in March? What are we supposed to do in these 9 and 14 game stretches? It's one thing if you're full strength and you're going through those types of situations. But when you're missing bodies and you're going through that, it's going to catch up to you eventually.
Yeah, and like we've seen multiple guys play much more minutes than they're used to. And I keep asking them, I'm like, how are your legs feeling? Like Sam Merrill and George Niang, those type of guys. And I'm like, how are your legs feeling? Especially George, like he's 30 years old, dude. Like you're not, you weren't scheduled to be starting this season. You weren't scheduled to be playing 30 minutes a night, three nights in a row. And he, like, the last couple times I've asked him, I don't think I asked him tonight, but the last couple times I asked him, he said, yeah, I've been good. I've been excited about the opportunities, and Sam the same way. But, like, those are the answers you're supposed to give, right? Like, you can see it in these guys' faces when they're, like, on the court. You can see it, especially when Sam Merrill's not having the best shooting nights that he's had recently. Like, you feed off the energy, one, from the crowd and also from your own successes. Sometimes you don't feel as tired if you're hitting your shots and playing good defense and things of that nature. And this might be the most hyped up Dean Wade podcast that we've done, but Dean Wade would have been so helpful on defense tonight against a Brooklyn Nets team that shot better than 50% from three-point range. They went 8-for-10 from three-point range in the third quarter. It was nasty work. 240-foot bomb while the shot clock is going down. Good defense is being played. Like, and I'm just sitting here looking down on the court, and I'm like, there's no way that these guys, like, it felt like everything Cam Thomas was putting up in that period alone was going in. And obviously that would have been one of Dean Wade's matchups, but I was trying to keep a tally of how many celebrations that Mikal Bridges was doing after his...
Oh my God, Dennis Schroeder goodness. Too.
Like, and they were mimicking each other's cellies, and I was like, dog, this just looks bad because it's all happening in front of the Cavs bench. Like, that's demoralizing to watch somebody celebrate in front of you when you cannot do any better than what you just did. It's not like those shots were easy at all. At times, there were open three-point shots on the wing because there were defensive mismatches and defensive changes that didn't have the rotations in time. But most of the shots that were taken in that third period were contested. And yet, they still were 80% from three. And then that opened up how much they were able to get to the rim for the 44 points that they scored in the quarter. Like, at that point, it's, all right, white, wave the white flag. Jared Allen, get out of there. George Niang, get out of there. Let the other guys get a shot at this and see if they can bring it back.
I think J.B. Bickerstaff said it really, really well after the game, Ethan, when I asked him about Dean Wade and how they're rebounding tends to suffer when he's not in there, and how their defense tends to suffer when he's not in there too. And if you're somebody that is just counting stats and you're looking at points and you're looking at individual rebounds, individual blocks, steals, assists, shot attempts, and stuff like that, I just think you're missing all of the impact that Dean can bring to the table, because that doesn't define his role for this team. And it doesn't define his impact for this team. And JB said after the game, Dean does a multitude of things. He covers his man and he keeps his man in front of him. It forces tough shots where our bigs don't have to go and help. So that leaves our bigs in rebounding position more. Then when the shot goes up, Dean is a guy who flies in. He goes and he grabs defensive boards. It's not just a one-dimensional thing with him. I think it's a couple things where he helps us, and we definitely feel the presence of him being missing. And that's the point. Tonight, everybody was getting blown by off the bounce. Even Isaac Okoro at times. As good of a defender as he's been throughout the course of this year for the Cavs, and he belongs on one of the two all-defensive teams, the Cavs were struggling big time when it came to containing dribble penetration and holding their own at the point of attack. That sent everybody scrambling. Guys were chasing on the three-point line. Guys were closing out late. Jared Allen was out of position when it came to trying to get rebounds. It's just not surprising to me, or all that surprising to me, that on a night that Dean Wade wasn't there to do all the little things that he does to impact this team in a positive way, that Jared Allen wasn't the same monster that he has been on the boards. He only finished with 9. it's not surprising to me that the Cavs gave up 8 offensive rebounds, because when you have a defense scrambling around and you have bigs scrambling around and they're out of position, it's going to be really, really difficult for them to keep these guys off the glass and get back into the position that they need to be in to box out. It's very difficult to grab rebounds when you're chasing from behind and you're playing from behind. And to further this point, you can say what you want to about whether this stat is meaningful or not, but when Dean Wade is on the court, don't look at his individual rebounding numbers, because that doesn't matter that much, because he's not Jared Allen, he's not Evan Mobley. But when Dean Wade is on the court for the Cavs, they defensive rebound at a 94th percentile. The difference between Dean Wade and whoever else it's going to be that's occupying those minutes, it drops by like 4 percentage points. That's a significant difference. And I think the Cavs felt that, beyond the fact that he has become an elite defender, a very, very impactful defender that can guard multiple positions. And when he's not on the court this year, the Cavs have been worse, both on offense and on defense. And I think that speaks to his impact.
All right, Chris, I want to end this podcast with something I don't know why keeps happening between the Brooklyn Nets and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Not 5 minutes in to the first quarter, without 4 main guys, George Niang got into it with Nick Claxton, I believe it was. And this is the third time that the Brooklyn Nets and the Cavs have got into a little scuffle. And George Niang may have escalated the situation a little bit with trying to do the AI step over.
May have, huh?
I don't know what he was doing, Chris. I don't know why he thought that was a good idea.
Of course he escalated the situation. That's what he does. When these kinds of things happen, George is often in the middle of it, and he is escalating it, because he's that kind of guy. He has that kind of role for this team. So yes, he escalated it by stepping over Nick Claxton, and that led to Claxton retaliating. Of course.
I'm a big believer of George Niang is one of those guys that needed, like, you know, sometimes you get into a little scuffle and like there's guys that are like, hold me back, and not are actually trying to do anything. I feel like George Niang was one of the guys that like really needed to be held back in that situation. One, because George is like, you know, like we said, he's a fiery energies type of guy and would have gone teed up, double teed up, kicked out the game, even if it meant for the team to get some more energy. But I'm like, dog, y'all are missing 4 guys. You telling me if you would have got kicked out of the game in the first quarter, they would have had to play Damian Jones the rest of the game? Sir, think. And not to mention, we had just seen earlier, before the game, the LSU and USC scuffle. And I was like, man, is this just a fight day? Like, we talking about Fight Club today? Wow. But because these teams are not on the same tier level when it comes to where they're trying to be in April. And why do you think these teams have beef, if you think they have beef? Or is it just a competitive fire between these two teams?
I don't know, man. It's March, toward the end of the season. I think everybody's tired. People dislike each other at this point. People are cranky. There was a scuffle in the Philadelphia-New York game. Like you said, there was a scuffle in the LSU-South Carolina women's game. I just think, one, teams are competitive. Two, it's a long season, and people just want it to be over at this point. And three, I don't know. The Cavs are kind of mouthy at times. George Niang doesn't stop talking when he's out there on the court. He can rub guys the wrong way. Dennis Schroeder is kind of mouthy. He can rub people the wrong way. Nick Claxton has been at the center. Believe it or not, he's been at the center of 2 of the 3 altercations between the two teams. He got in the one with Tristan Thompson in France, and then he was in this one with George Niang. So competitive juices are flowing. Machismo was part of it. But I don't know. I don't look at the Cavs and Nets as any kind of significant rivalry, as if it's the next Knicks-Cavs or something like that.
Yeah, I think Knicks-Cavs makes a whole lot more sense for there to be beef. But, man, the other team in New York wants to be in the storylines, man. They want a piece.
Well, here's the other thing too, Ethan. And I think this needs to be said. And I think the Cavs understand this. The playoff loss against the Knicks was horrendous for the organization. A lot of guys failed in that series. But it also led to the Cavs getting a reputation. And I asked Jared Allen this question the other night. I've talked to other players about this. There is a reputation that the Cavs have now, based on how that playoff series against the Knicks went, that they can be punked, they can be bullied, and they can be pushed around. And we've talked about this on the podcast. There are certain matchups that are going to be less favorable for the Cavs, just based on how their roster is constructed and based on how much more physicality that other team tends to play with than them. But this is a team that understands its reputation from that playoff series. And I just think they're at a point where they're going to say, we're not taking that mess, right? We're going to push back. We're going to fight back. And I think teams test them. I think teams test them physically. I think teams test them mentally, because I think teams sense a weakness with the Cavs. And the Cavs, I think part of the reason why they've gotten into these things, beyond all the other things that I already talked about, is because teams feel like they can go at them that way and get away with it. But the Cavs are trying to change their reputation, and they're trying to show that they're not that kind of team, that they are tougher than last year, that they are more physical than last year, that they aren't going to be a team that is going to get pushed around and bullied. So I think it helps to have George Niang as the enforcer type guy, the mouthy guy, the trash talker guy, the guy who brings a different kind of edge to him. Max Strus, he brings an edginess to him. Tristan Thompson, he has a level of playoff toughness. Obviously, he's been in a number of wars throughout the course of his career. Donovan Mitchell is not somebody who's going to back down. So it's interesting that these things continue to happen, but you sense it from the players in that locker room that they like when those things happen, and they like the response of each individual player in those instances, because it's the only way that you can stand your ground. If a team is going to test you that way, you have to stand your ground. And the Cavs are doing that this year.
Yep. Some teams smell blood in the water and want to attack. The Cavs are trying to show that they sharks too.
And it's like, no one's taking it too far, right? These aren't fist fights or something along those lines. It's something that happens in a lot of different places in the NBA. And I think Kelly Oubre Jr. said it following the game tonight against the Knicks. Nobody's going to fight here in the NBA. Nobody's going to get themselves suspended for 10 to 15 to 20 games for doing that. But if somebody is going to test you that kind of way, you're going to respond.
And Chris, I think we got to wrap up there, because there's nothing more exciting than the Cavs getting into a little tussle without three of their most fiery guys and their most fiery guy left on the court still holding his ground. So, with all that being said, and until tomorrow, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk Podcast. But remember to become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. Sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word STOP. It's easy. But we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.